They're eating the dogs. It's like, okay. And scene.
Mr. Speaker.
You're at the intersection of business and politics. This is the 14th and G podcast from Melman Consulting. Now, here's our host, Dean Hinkson.
Thank you for sending your podcast out to 14th and G. I am your host, Dean Hinkson. It's been 2 months, 2 months to the day since we've been together, boys. And what a 2 months it's been.
Jeez, peace, really?
The kids are back in school and we're back on the mic. Republican Bruce Melman, Democrat David Thomas. Gentlemen, welcome to 14th and G.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's try to get all of 2024 in 24 minutes because it was July 11th, the last time we were together. 2 days after that, July 13th, President Trump survived an assassination attempt at his rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. And 8 days after that, on July 21st, President Biden officially withdrew from the race, stepped down as the Democratic nominee. 15 days after that, on August 5th, Vice President Kamala Harris was installed as the Democrats' nominee for president in a virtual roll call of the delegates ahead of the Democratic convention. And so here we are, the morning after former President Trump and Vice President Harris went mano a mano, which is not Latin for man to man. It's Latin for hand to hand combat, which is what it was last night. So let's dive right in. Who wants to go first?
Well, DT should get to go first, but there is both Hinkson showing math and Latin in the morning. Man, we should get this guy in the office this early more often.
I'm highly caffeinated.
You sure you want me to go first here, Bruce? I actually was going to let you go because I know you have notes in front of you here. You clearly have the concepts of a plan on how to defend former President Trump, and I look forward to hearing what your concepts are.
I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. So. Thoughts on this. Number one, I think Harris clearly won, though I don't think this was a Biden-esque knockout, fights over, you know, end of the game. But on style and on substance, she seemed to me stronger. I mean, she at times was evasive, repetitive, or vague, but he was unhinged at times. He was sputtering. He clearly was in, like, almost comically baitable. Like, he literally stepped on every rake. Now, I'm not totally surprised if you take a look at the Insta polls after Trump's now 8 debates. He's 1-7. So it's kind of where I would expect it. That's thought one. Thought two, I think there's a pretty clear home field advantage. I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, the moderators. Again, if he didn't think, he knew he was going in. He was complaining about ABC. So that to me shows number three, you got to prepare. She was extremely well prepared. He was clearly just showing up, figuring the shtick would work. He had moments that were strong, but he couldn't string it together for 2 minutes. He would have, you know, a good soundbite or two. His closing argument should have been the argument he made every time, and he seemed to kind of forget about it until the very end to me. Most significantly, are first, he seemed like the incumbent. She seemed like the challenger. And second, Taylor Swift endorsed her, which was a smart thing for them to have likely in their pocket so that if it hadn't gone so well, they could have offset the news. And here, you know, the online Democratic glee. Again, I don't think this was a game over decisive thing, but she delivered everything she needed to and more as she progresses from a terrible 2020 candidate to a very effective scripted candidate to a not bad in debates with friendly inquisitors candidate. I think she's only got like one more step. She's got to show strength in an unscripted moment. But she was credible as the president last night.
I guess I missed the Taylor Swift endorsement. I guess that's why DT is wearing thigh-high leather boots this morning into the studio.
Also, it's Wednesday.
It's Wednesday.
I've got friendship bracelets for you, too, when you're willing to accept them. Bruce, how many presidents of the United States have there been?
I believe we're on number 46.
We're on number 46. How many of them have been white men?
That would be 45.
45. And yet, last night, Vice President Harris, with her command of the stage, command of the issues, being prepared, looked more like a president than the former president who was standing just feet away from her. She didn't just clear the hurdle, pass the bar. She knocked it out of the park. And I think for the Democrats here who have been riding this wave since she took over, last night is just another jolt of energy in that she is the right person for the job. She, I was, I mean, there are a lot of things that we'll talk about here today. From the moment she stepped on the stage, she was in control. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about handshakes, but she took control at the start. And the way the debate ended with Donald Trump going to the spin room, that tells you the story of this debate right here. She was in charge. She was in control. She was prepared. She was smart. I can't think of anything she should have done differently.
Look, there's no question. This is a vice president who is not known for her soaring oratory, her oratorical skills. She came out incredibly well prepared. She had command of the material. She was able to answer and speak extemporaneously, and she stuck to her talking points. And whoever prepared her, you know, had all of those sort of baiting things. And this, I showed you guys my notes. I started taking notes last night. And my last note is, they're eating the dogs, exclamation point. And that was in response to a dig that she made on Trump about people leaving his rallies early. And up until that point, it was a fairly good volley back and forth. I thought Trump had a really good answer on giving the abortion decision back to the states, not just talking to pro-choice independents, but talking to pro-life Republicans who now want to sort of move the goalposts on the debate with this question of a national abortion ban. I thought he had a good answer there. His best line is, you've had 3.5 years. And he didn't really get into making that point until his closing argument. You have to wonder how many people were there at 10:30.
You know, bringing up the Wharton School of Business, bringing up that leaders think around the world think he is a disgrace, and then watching him take the bait.
But Bruce, we live now in a universe, the first time in modern American political history where a debate has knocked out the nominee. I mean, that debate with Joe Biden knocked him out of the race. It shows you how consequential these debates can be. But like you said, this was not a knockout blow for Trump for a couple of reasons. One, let's put it into context. Harris had huge momentum coming when she got to the top of the ticket and then coming out of the convention in the last 2 weeks. Trump has brought this race back to even. New York Times, Siena out just a couple of days ago had Trump up by one. She's probably got to have a better than 3-point national lead because she's going to run up the score in states like California and New York. And then, look, I get it. Trump is glowering. He has his hobby horse issues that he's going to rant on a little bit. But we didn't really hear anything from Donald Trump that no one's ever heard or seen before.
Well, look, you're right. If anybody was ultimately surprised last night, they haven't been paying a lot of attention. Trump didn't knock Joe Biden out in the earlier debate. Joe Biden knocked Joe Biden out early in the debate. He punched himself in the face until he fell down and he was done. Trump, as in part with the last debate, only the last debate, because of the Biden self-destruction, that's all we paid attention to. But it's not like he was giving these extraordinary soaring rhetoric moments. He doesn't do that, to your point. He talks about eating dogs. He raises conspiracy theories. You know, he debated like he always debated. I thought she was fine. I agree with DT. She looked like she belonged up there, which is good on her because that's what a challenger's goal always is, to look like you belong there. The fact that she looked like, and I'm calling her the challenger as opposed to the incumbent, to me, the best thing for her is she was on offense the whole time. And when she would get asked about, why, you know, I understand your values haven't changed, but why did your position change? And the moderator asked her about five, six different issues. And she said, I'm going to get to that. And she never did. And we never really saw any of that, which, again, doesn't change the fact, DT, who's just chomping at the bit over here. she was clearly stronger. She had a better night. There's not a question of, did she win? Did she lose? But I never thought she was pressed, because the moderators didn't press her and Donald Trump failed to be prepared to press her. That's on him.
Okay. Something I always tell my kids at the end of a sporting event, there's nothing more boring than complaining about the refs. What does that mean? It means you lost. Why did you lose? Were you guys not prepared? Did you not practice hard enough? Like, don't blame the refs. Look at yourself.
Why did Gore lose in Florida in 2000? Remind me again.
Because... Well, I'm not getting into
that. He looked at his watch.
I believe it was the Supreme Court referees or...
But let's if the best that the Republicans can come up with in this debate is, we're going to complain about the fact-checking. There were three fact-checks here. Number one, we've already addressed. There are no dogs being eaten in Springfield. Number two, they pointed out, it is not legal anywhere in the United States to kill a baby after it is born. And number three, he lost the election. If that's the hill Republicans want to die on to defend this guy, go right ahead. It is nonsense to blame David Muir and Lindsay Davis. It shows you the thin gruel that Republicans have coming out of this.
Ooh, thin gruel.
Yes. And so I'll say now, I wanted to address one other thing that you brought up, which was you said this wasn't a knockout punch. It was a knockout punch for Joe Biden a few months ago. Why was it? It wouldn't have been a knockout punch if not for the Democratic Party coming together and realizing we are going to lose if we don't make a change. And why did that happen? Well, we have a former Speaker of the House and a leader in the Senate who realized it was more important for the good of the country to make a change. Now, let's think. You have a former Speaker of the House. His name is Kevin McCarthy. You have a current leader in the Senate who is Mitch McConnell. Those two guys, I guarantee you, will not be going down to Mar-a-Lago to say, for the good of the country, Donald, you got to step down. They won't do it. Those two, more than anybody else, empowered this clown. And they've never stood up to him.
And so
it is not. There's not a change. Rest aside. There's no time to make a change for the Republicans. You made this bed. You got to sleep in it.
I don't know what smoke-filled back room the Democratic Party poobahs decided it was going to be Vice President Harris at the top of the ticket when there were lots of other Democrats that obviously wanted a shot at that job. But it wasn't exactly an exercise in democracy to coronate her as the Democratic nomination.
What happened on January 6th, which, again, here we go. I know how much you guys both worked up in that building.
We agree with you on January 6th.
It is like, I don't want to hear about this exercise. I'm just pointing out that your party leaders do not have the courage to stand up to that orange buffoon.
So hold on.
To make a change when you both know in your heart he's terrible.
In 2016, the Republican Party ran every candidate under the sun against the guy, and they let the voters choose. Now, maybe the answer is that was the mistake, to Dean's point. The leaders should never let the voters choose. It should have been Hillary's turn. Then the second time, your party poobahs, to their credit, realized, holy shit, if we let the voters choose, we're going to get Bernie Sanders. So they set it up so that Joe Biden would win, and he won. Smart play. You guys won. This time you realized, holy cow, even George Clooney is now admitting that he's what we all knew, but we weren't letting the voters know. We weren't giving the voters the choice. Here again, we Republicans did our best. We ran Nikki Haley. We ran Ron DeSantis. The voters keep choosing in the Republicans. So to blame the party leadership for not going in is unfair to the fact that the party leadership hasn't found the Democratic Party's way around democracy.
Let's bring this back to neutral, and let's talk about where the race stands this morning in the wake of the debate. As I said, the RPC average had Vice President Harris up plus 1.2 points, essentially a tied race. That's the national
average.
The
seven swing states are all in the margin of error.
This is completely tied. Does this, I don't think this was a knockout blow for Trump. Harris may get a polling bump out of this.
She should.
The big question, I guess, in the morning after, everybody's asking, should they do another debate? Harris said immediately, let's do it again. And Trump said, let's go on Fox News, maybe.
Well, that's the key, right? Go ahead.
No, he actually right before we came in this morning to talk, he had called into Fox and said, I wrote it down here. I just want to make sure I get this
right. I hope my health will go home and check on my dog.
He said,
DT takes notes on Fox and Friends.
He said,
morning, and I think I got it. I probably don't want to debate her again. And that may be the only true thing he said in the past 24 hours.
Well, what's funny is so in watching it, I ended up tweeting, like, there's not going to be a rematch straight out of Rocky, less because of if I'm Kamala Harris, she'll do that every day. That made her look good. That made her look relatively strong. He fell for every trick he's supposed to fall for. And she wasn't pressed on stuff that she could have been pressed harder on. So I would suspect they're ready to go again on most networks, but not all networks. I suspect the Trump campaign would love to go, but they want what they would consider Fox or Newsmax or Russia Today. They want some. they want their own home field advantage. And I suspect ultimately we're less likely to get a repeat debate because of an inability to agree on the venue and the moderators and the ground rules. It's in her interest to do it again because this was net positive for her campaign. I we'll see if he acknowledges this was net negative, and then does he acknowledge it was net negative because she's ultimately a better debater. She just is. You know, he's whatever, and he's got lots of political skills, but I wouldn't, you know, Hillary was at 3-0 against him. In 2020, Biden was 2-0 against him, according to the Insta polls afterward. Obviously, the first debate with Biden, Biden knocked himself out. It's if I'm Trump, I'm not sure why I want to go back on the debate stage, because to succeed, you'd need to be prepared, which is not really his MO. You'd need to have kind of the patience to press these sort of arguments, and you'd need to have, which I think the last one could be gettable, a more level playing field where she's pressed as often as you are. Though, to be fair, to DT's point, if one candidate keeps making material misstatements of things that are long known and demonstrably untrue, it's not crazy if the moderators go after it. To me, where I would have hoped for a little bit more from the moderators is when she would dodge the question. I feel like with the Biden debate and with other debates, with, certainly with all the Hillary debates, you go back after the 2 minutes where they've dodged and say, thank you, but the question was, and see if they want to dodge it again when it becomes harder to dodge. That's the one thing I felt like was missing last night.
So we do have a venue and a platform for the next debate. It's October 1st, CBS News, New York City. That has been agreed to, and it's on the books. 20 days
that
away.
Was that a Trump-Biden agreement?
That was a Trump-Biden agreement, just as the debate for last night was part of the Trump-Biden
Trump
agreement.
Trump-Biden agreed to debates. Three?
Yeah, their next debate is October 1st. Like, it's set. And so we will see.
I think Trump is ready to debate Biden on October 1st. We'll see if Biden is at the beach. But
Joe Biden might be going like, put me back in, coach. I think I could do this.
I can do this.
Don't you think he was watching last night being like, I lost to this guy?
Oh, my goodness.
So we do have that venue. But back to the sort of larger picture here is you know, what we've only got
53 days.
There are not many days left here. So every day.
Virginia goes to the polls in 9 days.
And
first votes will be cast.
Pennsylvania early ballots get sent out, I think, this weekend. So the voting is starting now. Every day that is a good day for Harris gets her that closer to that goal here. And I think that's the aim of this campaign here. Keep the momentum going. They've kept it going for 50 plus days here, which is pretty remarkable. Yesterday was a very, very, very good day for her, and I suspect today will be as well.
What I always find interesting about the early voting is I would presume if you're voting in September, you're fully locked in way before the debate. You knew who you wanted. You want to be the first person to vote because you feel passionately about it. I would assume the persuadable voters and the maybe I will vote, maybe I won't vote people are among the last to vote. So they'll be closer to election day, which if you're Trump campaign means, you know, A, the upshot of this is maybe you're now down 2 points instead of 1.2 points in the average. I think she'll gain a pop, but I don't think this is over at all. I think it will move things very much on the margins. And second, you've still got multiple weeks to try to repress the case and try to figure out how to force her to say how much of the Biden agenda and record do you embrace, and how much of your agenda, approach from 2020 do you still embrace, and if you've changed them all, why?
Here is what we started. we saw her last night as she once again sort of pivots to get the votes together that she'll need to win. And I think, you know, Republicans out there have a choice to make. We've heard along, like, if you want to save your country, you got to vote for Kamala Harris. But the argument they will make, and I happen to agree with, is if Republicans want to save their party, they have to vote for Kamala Harris. There is no more luxury.
This morning, Joe.
There is no closing.
There is no more luxury in writing in Paul Ryan or Condoleezza Rice.
Amy wrote me in. I would like more votes for president. Thank you.
But here, you know, look, Vice President Cheney pointed out this week that he is endorsing Kamala Harris here.
David Thomas is now channeling Dick Cheney.
Right.
I just want to note for the record.
And if you want your party back, the way you get it back is to finally move beyond Trump and MAGA and all the nonsense that's been going on for the past 8 years here. Here is your opportunity. He lost in 2018. He lost in 2020. He lost in 2021. He lost in 2022. He will lose again in 2024. And we know he's going to lose, and we know he will disavow the results. So he needs to be beaten so badly that only the fringiest of the fringe on the right are going to say, yeah, he won this time too. Now is the opportunity. Many have been passed by leaders some of whom I've already talked about here today. It's your chance. Get beyond
DT,
this.
DT, I am going to leave your well wishes for the future of the Republican Party and your strategic plan for a return from the wilderness. I'll take it in the spirit in which it was intended, and I'll leave it right there because we do have a day job. And speaking of dead sprints, Congress came back this week, and it is a three-week dead sprint to the end of the month. September 30th is the end of the fiscal year. We got to get a continuing resolution. We've got lots of nominees being churned through the Senate as the candy store is about to close, we think, for Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. What's Congress going to get done in the next 3 weeks? What can they get done?
Well, the big thing they have to get done is fund the government. Everybody seems to agree we don't want to have a government shutdown. But deja vu all over again. We are, House Republicans are going to make it more difficult than it has to be. The Speaker has put together a bill that will likely get voted down as soon as today. And then we're back to square one. He says he doesn't have a secondary plan for how to fund the government here. We know what will happen here. There's going to be a continuing resolution. It will likely go to sometime but after the election, between Thanksgiving and Christmas. What's in the final deal will depend on what the outcome of the election is. But they're going to make it tough. We're going to fail. We're going to have to go back. At the end of the day, House Democrats overwhelmingly will keep the government open with a handful of Republicans.
Bruce, Speaker Johnson has put out a continuing resolution plus a piece of legislation called the SAVE Act, which is intended to stop illegal immigrants from voting in U.S. elections. If and it's a six-month CR well into the first quarter of next year, if he can get that passed through the House, I think it's a different debate. But if it does go down, and it looks like a lot of Republicans are not going to support it, if it does go down, as DT said, we're back to square one.
Look, it feels this is the old, the pain is unavoidable, the suffering is optional. You know, with the Dems controlling the Senate, with nobody wanting to look heading right into an election like they are crazy or can't do their jobs, it's pretty safe bet they're going to have a continuing resolution to around Thanksgiving, and then they're going to see what they can do thereafter. A lot depends on the election results. To me, the big question marks are, since Trump will clearly now be interested in changing the discussion. You know, his normal rule when you get to a political moment like this is roll a grenade out there, smoke grenade, and blow something up and see how do you change it. They're already making noise about he doesn't think the government should be funded if they don't do something to, quote unquote, protect, preserve elections. Now, as we know, I'll do the fact checking for you here, DT. There has been no evidence of illegal people either eating dogs or voting in elections. It's just, it doesn't happen. It's not a problem that has, you know, in need of a solution. It's already illegal. I don't know that Dems would say we're happy to continue making illegal something that isn't happening and hasn't happening, because I think they like the idea of Republicans, you know, holding their breath on something that isn't a problem in need of solution. Will they come together? I mean, if I'm a Dem, you know, I turn to people like Mark Elias. Is there a clever way to have Republicans focus on election, quote unquote, integrity, to help avoid the chaos you're describing? Because I am less focused on the weeks before until the election. I am more focused on the 9-week slog between Election Day and the certification of the results in Congress.
Lots of dust to settle, boys, and we'll be back to settle even more. Thank you for coming in here on an early morning to run down last night's debate. Republican Bruce Melman, Democrat David Thomas, thanks for being on 14th and G.
Thank you, Dean.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast, brought to you by the lobbying firm of Melman Consulting. For more, just type 14th and G podcast into your favorite search engine, or look for 14th and G wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe.
Beam me up, Mr. Speaker.